The land before them began steadily to rise again. Away in the distance eastward, they could now see a line of hills. The highest of them was at the right of the line, and a little separated from the others. It had a conical shape, slightly flattened at the summit.
"That's Weathertop," said Strider. "The old road, which we've left far away on our right, runs to the south of it, and passes not far from its foot. We might reach it by noon tomorrow if we go straight towards it. I suppose we'd better do so."
"What do you mean?" asked Frodo.
"I mean, when we do get there, it's not certain what we shall find. It's close to the road."
"But surely we were hoping to find Gandalf there?"
"Yes, but the hope is faint. If he comes this way at all, he may not pass through Bree, and so he may not know what we're doing. And anyway, unless by luck we arrive almost together, we shall miss one another. It will not be safe for him, or for us, to wait there long. If the riders fail to find us in the wilderness, they're likely to make for Weathertop themselves. It commands a wide view all round. Indeed, there are many birds and beasts in this country that could see us, as we stand here from that hilltop. Not all the birds are to be trusted, and there are other spies more evil than they are."
The hobbits looked anxiously at the distant hills. Sam looked up into the pale sky, fearing to see hawks or eagles hovering over them with bright, unfriendly eyes.
"You do make me feel uncomfortable and lonesome, Strider," he said.
"What do you advise us to do?" asked Frodo.
"I think," answered Strider slowly, as if he was not quite sure, "I think the best thing is to go as straight eastward from here as we can, to make for the line of hills, not for Weathertop. There we can strike a path I know that runs at their feet. It will bring us to Weathertop from the north and less openly. Then we shall see what we shall see."
All that day they plodded along, until the cold and early evening came down. The land became drier and more barren, but mists and vapours lay behind them on the marshes. A few melancholy birds were piping and wailing until the round red sun sank slowly into the western shadows, then an empty silence fell.
The hobbits thought of the soft light of sunset glancing through the cheerful windows of Bag End far away.
At the day's end they came to a stream that wandered down from the hills to lose itself in the stagnant marshland, and they went up along its banks while the light lasted. It was already night when at last they halted and made their camp under some stunted alder trees by the shores of the stream. Ahead there loomed now against the dusky sky the bleak and treeless backs of the hills. That night they set a watch, and Strider, it seemed, did not sleep at all. The moon was waxing, and in the early night hours a cold grey light lay on the land. Next morning they set out again, soon after sunrise. There was a frost in the air, and the sky was a pale, clear blue. The hobbits felt refreshed, as if they had had a night of unbroken sleep.
Already they were getting used to walking on short commons, shorter at any rate than what in the Shire they would have thought barely enough to keep them on their legs. Pippin declared that Frodo was looking twice the hobbit that he had been.
"Very odd," said Frodo, tightening his belt, "considering that there is actually a great deal less of me. I hope the thinning process will not go on indefinitely, or I shall become a wraith."
"Do not speak of such things," said Strider quickly, and with surprising earnestness.
The hills drew nearer. They made an undulating ridge, often rising almost to 1,000 feet, and here and there falling again to low clefts or passes leading into the eastern land beyond. Along the crest of the ridge, the hobbits could see what looked to be the remains of green-grown walls and dikes, and in the clefts there still stood the ruins of old works of stone. By night they had reached the feet of the westward slopes, and there they camped. It was the night of the 5th of October, and they were 6 days out from Bree. In the morning they found, for the first time since they had left the Chetwood, a track plain to see. They turned right and followed it southwards. It ran cunningly, taking a line that seemed chosen so as to keep as much hidden as possible from the view, both of the hilltops above and of the flats to the west. It dived into dells and hugged steep banks, and where it passed over flatter and more open ground on either side of it, there were lines of large boulders and hewn stones that screened the travellers almost like a hedge. "I wonder who made this path, and what for?" said Mary, as they walked along one of these avenues, where the stones were unusually large and closely set. "I'm not sure that I like it. It has a, well, rather a barrow-whitish look. Is there any barrow on Weathertop?"
"No, there's no barrow on Weathertop, nor on any of these hills," answered Strider. "The men of the West did not live here, though in their later days they defended the hills for a while against the evil that came out of Angmar. This path was made to serve the forts along the walls. But long before, in the first days of the North Kingdom, they built a great watchtower on Weathertop. Armonsul, they called it. It was burned and broken, and nothing remains of it now but a tumbled ring, like a rough crown on the old hill's head. Yet once it was tall and fair. It is told that Elendil stood there watching for the coming of Gil-galad out of the west in the days of the last alliance." The hobbits gazed at Strider. It seemed that he was learned in old lore as well as in the ways of the wild.
"Who was Gil-galad?" asked Merry,
but Strider did not answer and seemed to be lost in thought. Suddenly a low voice murmured, "Gil-galad was an elven king, of him the harpers sadly sing, the last whose realm was fair and free between the mountains and the sea. His sword was long, his lance was keen, his shining helm afar was seen, the countless stars of heaven's field were mirrored in his silver shield. But long ago he rode away, and where he dwelleth none can say, for into darkness fell his star in Mordor, where the shadows are."
The others turned in amazement, for the voice was Sam's.
"Don't stop," said Merry. "That's all I know," stammered Sam, blushing. "I learned it from Mr. Bilbo when I was a lad.
He used to tell me tales like that, knowing how I was always one for hearing about elves. It was Mr. Bilbo as taught me my letters.
He was mighty book-learned, was dear old Mr. Bilbo, and he wrote poetry. He wrote what I have just said."
"He did not make it up," said Strider. "It's part of the lay that is called the Fall of Gil-galad, which is in an ancient tongue. Bilbo must have translated it. I never knew that."
"There was a lot more," said Sam, "all about Mordor. I didn't learn that part. It gave me the shivers. I never thought I should be going that way myself."
"Going to Mordor?" cried Pippin. "I hope it won't come to that."
"Do not speak that name so loudly," said Strider.
It was already midday when they drew near the southern end of the path, and saw before them, in the pale clear light of the October sun, a grey-green bank, leading up like a bridge onto the northward slope of the hill. They decided to make for the top at once, while the daylight was broad. Concealment was no longer possible, and they could only hope that no enemy or spy was observing them. Nothing was to be seen moving on the hill. If Gandalf was anywhere about, there was no sign of him. On the western flank of Weathertop, they found a sheltered hollow, at the bottom of which there was a bowl-shaped dell with grassy sides. There they left Sam and Pippin with the pony and their packs and luggage. The other three went on. After half an hour's plodding climb, Strider reached the crown of the hill. Frodo and Merry followed, tired and breathless. The last slope had been steep and rocky. On the top they found, as Strider had said,
a wide ring of ancient stonework, now crumbling or covered with age-long grass. But in the centre a cairn of broken stones had been piled. They were blackened, as if with fire. About them the turf was burned to the roots, and all within the ring the grass was scorched and shrivelled, as if flames had swept the hilltop. But there was no sign of any living thing. Standing upon the rim of the ruined circle, they saw all round below them a wide prospect, for the most part of lands empty and featureless, except for patches of woodland away to the south, beyond which they caught here and there the glint of distant water. Beneath them on this southern side there ran like a ribbon the old road, coming out of the west and winding up and down, until it faded behind a ridge of dark land to the east. Nothing was moving on it. Following its line eastward with their eyes, they saw the mountains. The nearer foothills were brown and sombre. Behind them stood taller shapes of grey, and behind those again were high white peaks glimmering among the clouds.
"Well, here we are," said Mary, "and very cheerless and uninviting it looks. There is no water and no shelter, and no sign of Gandalf. But I don't blame him for not waiting, if he ever came here."
"I wonder," said Strider, looking round thoughtfully. "Even if he was a day or two behind us at Bree, he could have arrived here first. He can ride very swiftly when need presses." Suddenly he stooped and looked at the stone on the top of the cairn. It was flatter than the others, and whiter, as if it had escaped the fire. He picked it up and examined it, turning it in his fingers.
"This has been handled recently," he said. "What do you think of those marks?"
On the flat underside, Frodo saw some scratches.
"There seems to be a stroke, a dot, and three more strokes," he said.
"The stroke on the left might be a G rune with thin branches," said Strider. "It might be a sign left by Gandalf, though one cannot be sure. The scratches are fine, and they certainly look fresh. But the marks might mean something quite different, and have nothing to do with us. Rangers use runes, and they come here sometimes."
"What could they mean, even if Gandalf made them?" asked Merry.
"I should say," answered Strider, "that they stood for G3, and were a sign that Gandalf was here on October the 3rd, that is, 3 days ago now. It would also show that he was in a hurry, and danger was at hand, so that he had no time or did not dare to write anything longer or plainer. If that is so, we must be wary."
"I wish we could feel sure that he made the marks, whatever they may mean," said Frodo. "It would be a great comfort to know that he was on the way, in front of us or behind us."
"Perhaps," said Strider. "For myself, I believe that he was here, and was in danger. There have been scorching flames here, and now the light that we saw 3 nights ago in the eastern sky comes back to my mind. I guess that he was attacked on this hilltop, but with what result I cannot tell. He is here no longer, and we must now look after ourselves and make our own way to Rivendell as best we can."
"How far is Rivendell?" asked Merry, gazing round wearily.
The world looked wild and wide from Weathertop.
"I don't know if the road has ever been measured in miles beyond the Forsaken Inn, a day's journey east of Bree," answered Strider. "Some say it is so far, and some say otherwise. It's a strange road, and folk are glad to reach their journey's end, whether the time is long or short. But I know not how long it would take me on my own feet, with fair weather and no ill fortune. 12 days from here to the ford of Bruinen, where the road crosses the loud water that runs out of Rivendell. We have at least a fortnight's journey before us, for I do not think we shall be able to use the road."
"A fortnight," said Frodo. "A lot may happen in that time."
"It may," said Strider.
They stood for a while silent on the hilltop, near its southward edge. In that lonely place Frodo for the first time fully realized his homelessness and danger. He wished bitterly
that his fortune had left him in the quiet and beloved Shire. He stared down at the hateful road, leading back westward to his home. Suddenly he was aware that two black specks were moving slowly along it, going westward. And looking again, he saw that three others were creeping eastward to meet them. He gave a cry and clutched Strider's arm. "Look," he said, pointing downwards. At once Strider flung himself on the ground behind the ruined circle, pulling Frodo down beside him. Merry threw himself alongside.
"What is it?" he whispered.
"I don't know, but I fear the worst," answered Strider.
Slowly they crawled up to the edge of the ring again and peered through a cleft between two jagged stones. The light was no longer bright, for the clear morning had faded, and clouds creeping out of the east had now overtaken the sun as it began to go down. They could all see the black specks, but neither Frodo nor Merry could make out their shapes for certain. Yet something told them that there, far below, were black riders assembling on the road beyond the foot of the hill.
"Yes," said Strider, whose keenest sight left them in no doubt. "The enemy is here."
Hastily they crept away and slipped down the north side of the hill to find their companions.